Of the 103 episodes of Hancock's Half Hour recorded for radio, nearly two dozen are missing or lost. So we've been recreating them from the original scripts. Before this week's episode, though, here's producer Neil Pearson to explain why one particular character is missing from the Missing Hancocks.
Hello, I'm Neil Pearson, producer of The Missing Hancocks, and welcome to this week's episode, The Crown Jewels. As with last week, there's a strange twist to this episode. Tony Hancock himself is missing from it. In the spring of 1955, the BBC was preparing to record the second series of its new hit show, Hancock's Half Hour. At the same time, Hancock was appearing in Talk of the Town at the Adelphi Theatre in London's West End. Managements on both sides were unhappy that the notoriously fragile Hancock was working on two jobs at the same time. And they were right to be nervous. Hancock, unsettled by the arguments raging around him, walked out of Talk of the Town midway through a performance and disappeared. The first Dennis Mayne Wilson, producer of Hancock's Half Hour, knew of his star's impending non-appearance was when he went to the Adelphi on Friday with a copy of the script for Hancock, only to find that he'd vanished, throwing Sunday's recording into jeopardy. At 4 o'clock the following morning, Mayne Wilson received a phone call from a perplexed police officer who had tickets for the show's recording the next day and had been informed by a colleague that Hancock had been spotted at London Airport getting on a plane for Rome. Emergency meetings were convened and Hancock's old friend Harry Secombe was asked to down tools at the Goon Show and step in at ridiculously short notice. Secombe played Hancock for the first three episodes of the series. All three of those episodes have been lost, so there's no way of knowing how Secombe played the part. Did he use some of his Goon Show zaniness, or did he try to out-Hancock Hancock? Two things we do know. There was no time to rewrite the first episode. In that script, the star's lines are still ascribed to Tony. But in the second and third scripts, Tony had become Harry, and there are signs that Ray Gorton and Alan Simpson had begun to rewrite the character to play to Secombe's strengths. And secondly, whatever Secombe was doing with the part had greatly impressed the writers and producer, so much so that it was agreed that if Hancock did not turn up to the read-through for episode 4, the programme would henceforth be called Secombe's Half Hour. Not surprisingly, perhaps, when the cast and crew gathered to begin work on episode 4, Hancock was there. The original recording for episode 4 is also missing. You'll hear our version later in this series. But the script was extensively rewritten by Gorton and Simpson in expectation of their star's return. It features both Secombe and Hancock. The writers must have been delighted to have Hancock back, but that didn't stop them extracting some revenge. At some point in the show, every character tells Hancock how wonderful Secombe had been, how nice he was, and how sad they would be to see him go. Hancock never missed another episode. In our series, the role of Harry Secombe is played by Andy Secombe, Harry's son. We can't know for sure how good Harry was in Hancock's Half Hour, but we can be certain he would have been very proud of his son, who is brilliant in the role, as you're about to find out. So, sit back, relax, and for the first time in more than 60 years, enjoy The Crown Jewels, the second episode of the second series of Hancock's Half Hour.
This is the BBC Light Programme. We present Bill Kerr, Sidney James, Andre Melly and Kenneth Williams in Hancock's Half Hour. And in place of Tony Hancock, meet Harry Secombe. In the continued unfortunate absence of Tony Hancock, Mr. William Kerr, the international vagrant, has been compelled to find some other way of providing himself with succour. the sucker in this case being handsome Harold Secombe. Mr. Kerr has rooted himself in Mr. Secombe's London flat, where he freely enjoys the amenities that are offered. Well, not actually offered, but, well...
Oh, this is the life. Drink, Harry?
Yes, please.
What do you want?
What have I got left?
Well, let's see. Ginger ale, soda water, tomato juice, orange squash, just name it.
What are you drinking?
Scotch.
That's what I'll have.
Well, there's none left.
None left? There were four bottles there last night.
I've had a cold, Harry.
You had a cold. Four bottles of scotch for a cold? Bill, promise me one thing.
What?
Move out before you catch pneumonia. Give me a cigarette, then.
Cigarette, yeah, sure. One of your Turkish or Virginian?
I'll have a Turkish one.
Turkish, huh? Let's see. One, two. No, I think you better make it a Virginian.
Why?
I haven't got enough dog ends to roll a Turk.
Dog ends? There was a box full of those ones there yesterday. Is this carrying friendship too far, William? Since you moved in here, you've done nothing but drink all my liquor and smoke all my cigarettes.
I'm only doing it for you, Harry.
For me?
Sure, I like you. I don't want to see you wind up a dipsomaniac with a smoker's cough.
Yeah. The sooner Hancock comes back and collects you, the better.
Well, I wouldn't bet on that. The minute Tubbs sees this place, he'll move in with me. Especially when he sees Andre.
Ah, yes. Andre. Where is she?
Well, she's upstairs getting ready. Don't forget, we promised to show around London today.
I haven't forgotten. I've worked out two routes to take her on. If you're coming with us, Covent Garden, Trafalgar Square, Westminster Abbey, the Tate Gallery and the Tower of London.
And if I don't come with you?
Hyde Park, Regent's Park, St. James's Park, and Hampstead Heath. You don't want to go, do you, Bill?
Yeah.
Bill, you know the old saying, two's company, three's a crowd.
Yeah, okay. Let's leave Andre here.
Yes, all right. No! No, she's been looking forward to this ever since we brought her back from Paris last week.
Yeah, I'll say one thing. She certainly made a difference around this place. Her wonderful French cuisine.
Yes, she's a good cook, too.
Yeah. Say, she's a long time getting ready. We'll be late if she doesn't hurry up.
Bill, Harry, I'm ready.
Wow.
Andre, you're not wearing that dress to go out in, are you?
Why, yes, why not?
Well, it's very nice. It's lovely, but, well, the neckline.
What about it?
Where is it?
Don't take any notice of him, Andre. It's beautiful.
I bought it just before I left Paris. It's the latest fashion over there in summer frocks. Dior calls it his empire neckline.
Oh, well, that's another empire fallen.
Oh, you English men, you have such nasty minds. If I wore this dress in France, nobody would take any notice.
That's the trouble with Frenchmen today. They've lost interest in everything.
Well, shall we go? We've got a lot of ground to cover today.
Oh, I'm looking forward to this so much. What are we going to see?
Oh, the usual tourist stuff. Whitehall, Pall Mall, Horse Guards Parade. There, you can see the guardsmen in their bearskins.
And you have the nerve to talk about my dress.
We're going to take sandwiches with us?
No, I was thinking we might dine at my club.
Oh, how lovely.
Any snag is, they don't allow women, layabouts, or unpaid members. So there you are. None of us can go.
Well, never mind. I've packed a typical French picnic for you.
Oh, scrumptious.
Yes, a bottle of red wine, a bottle of white wine, a bottle of cognac.
Well, that's Bill's lunch. You better take some sandwiches for us.
And what about tonight? You did promise to show me some of London's nightlife.
Well, I don't know about that, Andre. Gets pretty sordid. It's quite commonplace to see groups of cider-crazed Londoners doing the knees up on the pavement till as late as 10:30 at night. Nah, it's not for a woman's eyes.
Well, come along. Let us get started. I hope you are a good guide, Harry.
Ah, yes. There's not much about London I don't know.
Good. We'll start off at Buckingham Palace.
Where? Oh, yes, of course. Buckingham Palace. Yes, I'll take you there. We'll get a 30-volt bus to Tottenham Court Road, underground to Leicester Square, change to the Northern Line for the Strand, 59 bus to Piccadilly, then tube to Hyde Park, then a 16 bus to Victoria Street.
Wouldn't it be better to walk?
Why?
It's only round the corner.
Yes. Yes, yeah. I was thinking of the pub. Should we go?
Wonderful town London is. There is so much to see. Where are we now?
This is Covent Garden Market.
Oh, come on, please, let's walk through it.
Well, I don't know. How well do you understand English?
I know most words of the language.
Well, let's go through. You'll hear the rest.
Oh, yes. Come on, Harry.
Well, all right, but on one condition.
What?
Well, you see that big man balancing the 15 baskets on his head?
Yes.
And you see that wheelbarrow he's just about to walk into?
Yes.
Well, promise me at the moment of impact you'll put your hands over your ears.
Well, look out. Here he goes.
Oh, spit. This isn't my day. That's the third lot of daffs I've dropped this morning. I might as well just go home. It makes you sick, it really does.
And he looks so tough.
With a voice like that, you've got to be tough.
London all day. I was reading about it in my guidebook. It says London covers an area of 643 square miles with a population of 12 million people.
Yes, it's quite an amusing little village.
It says there are 4,249 public houses, 52 theatres, 327 cinemas, 3 ice rinks, and then dance halls, swimming pools. Isn't that wonderful?
Yes, I suppose so. But if only there was something to do.
Well,
this is the Strand. That's Australia House. You walk in there, there's a picture of every famous Australian through history.
Oh, is your picture in there, Bill?
Yes, next to Ned Kelly, isn't it?
Yeah. Down there, you've got Trafalgar Square. That leads to the Haymarket, which leads to Piccadilly.
Oh, yes, and where does Piccadilly lead to?
Well, if you play your cards right...
Trafalgar Square! That is the large column built into the middle of the square.
Ah, that must be Nelson's column.
Ah, quite correct. It's built by Nelson in 1895. As a lookout post from the top of which he could keep his eye on the movements of the galleons as they made their way towards Plymouth Hoe. Note the hordes of pigeons still hanging about, waiting for him to come down with a message for the fleet.
Oh, I'm so glad you're with me. This guidebook has got it all wrong.
I'm not surprised. They're very unreliable. I bet it says in there that the Tate Galleries were built to exhibit famous paintings.
Well, yes, it does.
I thought so. They all say that.
And they're wrong?
Of course.
What is it then?
It's where Harry Tate was born. There's not much I don't know about London.
Well, come on, let's go. We've got a lot more to see yet.
Over there we have the famous Tower Bridge, a remarkable feat of engineering, rendered, alas, quite useless in 1943 by a bunch of German frogmen who came along one dark night and sawed the thing in half.
Now, please, please, Harry, that's too much. I almost believe that Marble Arch was built for Lady Docker to play under in the wet weather. And I'm quite prepared to accept that Cleopatra's needle was that big because she had bad eyes. Tower Bridge and Frogmen?
Please yourself. Why else would a perfectly good bridge be sliced across the middle?
So it can be pulled up to let big boats through.
Ah, a likely story. So it can be pulled up to let big boats.
Oh, look, the bridge has been pulled up to let that big boat through.
The Tower of London, built during the general strike of 1926. To provide employment for a few out-of-work beef-eaters. This fine
look,
building
shall
has...
Look, shall we go in and have a look around?
Well, very well. Observe the narrow holes all round the walls of the tower at regular intervals. History has it that these are arrow slits. I think we can discard that. Half a ton of cannonballs wouldn't make a hole in that wall, let alone an arrow. It has been said during the Luftwaffe. This, of course, is the famous Bloody Tower, built in 1132 for the imprisonment of enemies of the crown. And where, you will remember, in 1543, James Robertson Justice had Richard Todd thrown in when he caught him going a little bit heavy with Glynis Johns.
What a fascinating place it is. Do you know much about its history, Harry?
Yes, there's not much I don't know about this place.
Well, give it a rest for a few minutes. Here's the official guide. He can tell us all about it.
He won't be able to tell you anything more than I can.
Come on, let's join the crowd.
Ladies and gentlemen, your attention, please. This is probably your first visit. It's my 14,325th time round. I've read 348 books on the place, written 3 myself, and have given 872 lectures on it in 54 different countries. So please, while I'm talking, do try and refrain from whispering to your neighbour. And now, if you'll follow me, I'll... Madam, will you please tell that revolting child to take his jammy fingers off Anne Boleyn's tomb? Thank you. It was in this room we are now standing in that two innocent little princes, not more than 13 years old, were brutally murdered by the wicked Richard III, a foul crime that shocked the country.
A man's off his chump. That's not what they learned me at school.
Their ghosts are believed to haunt the place, reliving the intense agony they suffered. See page 23 in your guidebooks. Get your jammy fingers off that tapestry.
Those young princes were murdered in 1537, you know.
Incidentally, the young princes were murdered in 1483.
Yeah, obviously not talking about the same young princes.
Over there to the left, you can see the executioner's block on which over 500 prisoners had their heads chopped off. This is the axe which was used. You can still see the bloodstains on the blade. Don't touch them.
Of course, the interesting thing about that axe is that it was made out of solid gold by Thomas Culpepper in his workshop in Aldgate in 1425.
Really?
As you can see, the axe is made of cast iron and was captured on a French battlefield in 1374.
Yes, it could be right there. It has got a typically French design now I come to look at it.
Just how a Turkish axe came to be found on a French battlefield, we can only assume.
Turkish, of course. Yes, I should have known by that old type handle. Typical Turkish style, 14th century.
We must apologise for the handle, but it broke last week and we had to replace it with a new one. Now we come to one of the most interesting rooms in the tower.
Ah, yes. Most fascinating, this one. The very room in which Catherine of Aragon was shot by Henry V in 1356.
Yes, the very room in which Catherine Howard was beheaded by Henry VIII in 1542.
Yes, of course. I was thinking of her sister.
Catherine, of course, was the only daughter of Lord Edward Howard.
Henry's second wife.
And was Henry's fifth wife. And now we come to the famous Wakefield Tower that houses that fabulous collection...
The crown jewels?
The crown jewels.
See, I told you, there's not much I don't know about this place.
Oh, the crown jewels. Aren't they beautiful?
Yeah, there's over 4 million quid's worth of stuff there.
Good heavens. They must be worth a fortune.
Hey, look, the guard's moved on. Come on, we'll lose them.
Oh, no, let's stay here a while and look at them. I've never seen anything quite like them.
Yeah, they're beautiful, aren't they?
They certainly are. Oh, good morning, Mr. Beefeater. Exquisite jewels, are they not?
Yes, lovely things. If anybody could whip that lot, they could live in luxury for the rest of their life.
Huh, I suppose they could.
Lock that door a minute, will you?
Hey, Harry, you can see them better from round the other side. And say, I know you, don't I?
Do you?
Yeah, the build and the voice. Of course, Sir James. Harry, you've met Sir James.
Why, yes, of course. I'm sorry, Mr. James. I didn't recognise you in the beefeater's uniform and the black mask.
Say, how long have you been a beefeater, Sid?
I joined this morning. If all goes well, I'll resign tonight.
We were just saying how much the crown jewels would be worth to someone who stole them.
Oh, come on now. Who could possibly steal the crown jewels that would take a master criminal?
Yeah, of course. Why, he'd have to disguise himself as a beefeater or something.
Hold this sack for me.
Certainly.
How long have the jewels been kept here, Mr. James?
Oh, hundreds of years. I hear they're being transferred soon.
When?
Hold that sack open.
Sure. As I was saying, the crook hasn't been born who could get this lot.
I agree.
It's burglar-proof.
Of course it is.
Look at that protection. Caged in with iron bars 2 inches thick.
Impregnable.
Gonna take a hacksaw to get through them. Sid.
What?
What are you doing with the hacksaw?
Well, I told you, the jewels have been transferred. There's been a rumour that someone might try and pinch them.
No.
Yes, so I've been ordered to take them away and hide them.
Good man.
Haven't you got a key?
Key? No, there aren't any keys. Oh, no. They didn't make keys. Too risky.
Really?
Yes, they might fall in the wrong hands, and then anybody could walk in and pinch them.
He's right, you know.
Give us a hand with these bars.
Yeah, but...
You heard what the man said, William. Force those bars apart.
Yeah, but Harry...
Later, William. We must help Mr. James transfer the jewels. Don't you realise the honour that has befallen us? We will go down in history. Harold Seacombe and William Kerr, who were instrumental in removing the crown jewels of the British Empire.
Yeah, but I don't
Harry,
like...
Harry, man, hurry. The thief may be in the building at this very moment.
Well, so what? It's impossible to steal those jewels. Look at that glass they're covered by. Inch thick. How's he going to get through that?
Hold this, will you?
What is it?
A brick.
No. Please. Allow me. You might miss. There.
Thank you. Hold the bag open while I get the stuff out, will you?
No, don't you bother. You might cut yourself. Let me do it. I've got my gloves on. Here is that crown. Couple of scepters. Jobs.
Head of scarf, handful of diadem, crown of India, armful of swords, golden spurs, fistful of gauntlets, handful of loose diamonds. Don't know where they've fallen out from. There.
Thanks a lot. I better be off now.
No, no. Don't go yet. There's another couple of crowns over there.
Good job I was here. You'd have missed those.
Well, that's a lot. Oh, wait a minute. Can you reach my brick? It's in there. It's the only one I've got. Oh, thanks. Where are you lot off to now?
Well, we're showing Andre round London. We're going to the Tate Gallery next.
Tate Gallery, eh? There's a lot of valuable paintings in there, isn't there?
Yeah.
I'll give you a lift. I've got a car outside.
Oh, are you going that way?
Oh, yes. We've heard these thieves are after the paintings as well.
You mean...
Yes. They'll have to be transferred. Come on. Here we are. Pile in. Sling the jewels in the back.
Hey, look. We're being chased. They're after us.
Well, well, well.
It must be the crooks. They must have seen us take the jewels. They're cunning devils. Look at them, disguised as policemen. They won't catch us. Faster, man, faster. We must get to the Tate Gallery and take those paintings before they do. Over there, we have Whistler's Mother, painted by Rembrandt in 1586 before he died. And over there in the corner, you will notice three or four constables.
Whoa, that's too many for me. I'll turn Queen's evidence. It wasn't me.
Sit,
I never...
Sit. They're painters.
Oh.
And now we come to the old master section. You see a collection of some of the most valuable paintings in the world.
Have you got a razor blade, Andy?
Oh, don't bother to cut them out. Just shove them in the sack, frames and all.
Let's see, Van Dyck, is he any good?
They're worth £30,000.
Blimey, anybody think it was hand-painted? Shove it in. We'll have that row of two lousy low trees as well. Good Botty Kelly, yeah, that might sell well in Dublin. Come on, hurry up, let's clean this place out. Those thieves will be here any minute.
I would hate to interfere with the saving of England's treasures, but I did so want to see the Elgin marbles in the British Museum.
No, you don't want to bother with them. I think we ought to go round and save Lord and Lady Dockers' stuff first.
But I want to see the Elgin marbles.
There's plenty of marbles at Lady Dockers' place.
Mr. James, the Elgin marbles are ancient Greek statues.
So what?
Well, they're beautiful.
No.
They're priceless.
I'll go and get a lorry. Well, I think we can say that was a good day's work. Let's see what we've got. The crown jewels, 45 paintings, the Elgin marbles, strippings from Pharaoh's tomb, two casefuls of rare coins, and three bound and gag museum attendants.
Foolish fellows, fancy not believing our story. I told them we were saving them from being stolen. Supposing I'd been as stupid as them? England would have been ruined by now.
Paper, evening paper, Star, News and Standard. Read about the sensational robberies. Paper, read all about it.
Hey, boy, give us one of each.
Here you go, Gav.
Here's a diamond. Keep the change.
Oh, thank you.
Hey, catch these headlines. Darren London treasure robberies. Police no ringleader. Early arrests guaranteed. Commons demand heavy sentences for culprits.
My goodness. I wouldn't like to be in those fellows' shoes when they're caught. Would you, Sid? Sid?
He's gone.
Gone?
Yes. When you got to that bit about heavy sentences, he muttered something about South America and letting two other men take the blame.
Who could he have meant?
Oh, I don't know. But both their Christian names were Charlie.
Oh, well. We can't worry about them. We've got all this treasure to look after. Funny, Sidney running off like that. I can't understand it.
Harry.
Yes?
I've just been reading about these robberies.
Well?
Hiya, Charlie.
Pardon?
This afternoon, the crown jewels, the Elgin marbles, 45 old masters, the Pharaoh's tomb, and two cases of rare coins were stolen.
Nonsense! We've got them!
The descriptions of the criminals are as follows. One man in a beefeater's uniform, one short, fat man with enough hair for three people, one thin Australian could be one of the people whose hair the fat guy's got.
A short, fat, and a thin...
Harry, darling, what are you going to do now?
Well, if the papers are anything to go by, 80 years apiece.
They may even give us life!
What are we going to do now? They'll never believe what happened.
First of all, you must get rid of the loot. They mustn't find you with it. Leave it somewhere, someplace where they can find it.
Yes, we'll leave it in an empty railway carriage.
Nah, the number of times they get cleaned out, they'll still be missing for the next coronation.
I've got it! We'll put them back.
Huh?
We'll wait till it's dark, then we'll go around and put all the stuff back where it came from.
Say, what a wonderful idea. I think.
Well, you've got nothing to lose. Come on, let's get started. Take the pictures back first, then the British Museum stuff, then we'll put the crown jewels right there. Scepter over there. The orb just here. Golden spurs here. There. Finished. Everything back in its rightful place.
Oh, thank goodness. Now let us go before someone finds us here.
Yeah, this tower gives me the creeps at night. I keep expecting to see Anne Boleyn walk through the door playing yo-yo with her head.
Well, we've got nothing to worry about now. You'll be able to sleep safely tonight, Andre.
Why? Are you going to have Bill locked up?
I thought we'd never get those jewels put back.
Hey, quiet. Here comes a copper.
We've got nothing to be frightened of. Nobody will ever know we had anything to do with the robberies. Keep calm.
Good evening, sirs, madam.
Good evening to you, constable. A beautiful night, is it not?
Oh, gorgeous.
Found those jewel robbers yet, eh?
Yes, I think so.
Yes, lovely moon out tonight.
Yes, makes quite a picture as it glints on the old Koh-i-Noor stuck on your nut there.
I beg your pardon?
Oh, I think you better come along with me, your majesty.
No, it's all a mistake.
Bill, what has gone wrong? I thought Harry put the crown back.
Well, so did he.
Well, what happened?
Well, you know, it was dark, he was nervous, and well...
Well?
Well, if Harry hadn't been caught, the next King of England would have been crowned with a size 10 bowler.
And over there we have the prison walls, built in 1763 by the convicts themselves.
How interesting, Harry.
Yes, there's not much I don't know about this place. This is my cell here. It has quite an interesting history. In 1847...
You have been listening to Hancock's Half Hour, featuring Andy Secombe with Kevin Eldon, Robin Sebastian, Simon Greenall and Susie Kane. Incidental music was composed by Wally Stott and recorded by the BBC Concert Orchestra, conducted by Levin Parikian. The script was written by Ray Galton and Alan Simpson, and the programme, which was recorded, was produced by Ed Morrish and Neil Pearson.